You're listening to Sphera Now, a podcast for environmental health, safety, and quality professionals around the globe. This is brought to you by Sphera, the largest global provider of integrated risk management software and information services with a focus on environmental health and safety, operational risk, and product stewardship. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to the Sphera Now podcast. I'm James Tarani, editor-in-chief of Spark Magazine. Today's guest is Cole Sandow, the CEO at Health Scholars, which creates online learning software as well as virtual reality medical training. This is one of a series of podcasts focused on virtual reality and augmented reality with workplace safety. Thank you so much for joining me today, Cole. Let's jump right into it. So tell me about how Health Scholars is using virtual reality for training.
Yeah, we're really interested in using virtual reality kind of as the next modality of simulation and kind of rich experiential-based training. Within healthcare, there's several tools that we have to be able to train large numbers of clinical staff. And, that originally started with classroom lecture-based training. Over the years evolved to include e-learning training. And then about 20 years ago, there was the advent of medical simulation, which is, using kind of mannequins within sim centers to really replicate real life scenarios to allow people to train in. And what we're seeing is that while medical classic, what they call it, high fidelity simulation is a great tool within healthcare, it doesn't scale really well. You traditionally have a physical simulation center that people come to, and you do a simulation, but there's a lot of setup involved and equipment and that type of thing, and it's a one-to-one type of activity. You have to set it up, you train a person, then you set it up again, you train another person, and people have to come to it. But the one thing that's happening in healthcare is that we have a high degree of scale that's happening from a consolidation perspective in healthcare, where, hospital systems are buying hospitals right and left. And now all of a sudden you're looking at having to train instead of 100 people, now potentially 10,000 people. But we still have that same physical simulation tool that itself inherently doesn't scale well. And what we're seeing is VR is our ability to kind of virtualize what's done in physical simulation centers and bring it into software so that we can scale that type of learning activity that was happening in the physical sim centers at a much broader scale and much more cost-effective scale over these much larger learner populations that we're seeing in healthcare. And we're very focused on building patient safety-related course content to really help people get the hands-on experience in these kind of key high-risk safety situations so that they can really practice that and we can really get that learning out in a much broader sense to the healthcare industry.
Sure. And the first video, or maybe the only video I saw, was about something that kind of freaked me out a little bit. It was about a fire in the operating room on the patient.
Yes.
Is that something that's very typical? Because it's a little scary.
So it happens. So depending kind of what source you look at, it probably happens with between 100 to 500 times a year. And it's exactly that. It's a fire that happens on a patient. And so there ends up being a combination of things that happens. And it's usually because, oxygen is being run during the course of anesthesia and the oxygen ends up pooling somehow and a spark happens and you get an explosion from it, and then the patient becomes the fuel for the fire after that, and it just happens. And unfortunately, it can, a couple of people die every year from these surgical fires, and they're unfortunately just accidents. And so a lot of people, especially since we've been into this, we talk to them, never experience one. You'll have 10, 20 years in a career and never see one, but when they happen basically instantly, and how quick you respond to that is a really big deal, right? Because somebody's literally on fire and you need to get that out. And the longer you delay kind of responding to it, the worse the injury can become. And it's a real thing that happens. But it's a really challenging thing for people to train on because it's, it's difficult to replicate, and just reading about it isn't really necessarily good enough. You know, you need to really have some ability to practice with that.
So that's probably the reason why you chose that as the first application, just because it is so hard to simulate?
It is, yeah. So like, when we started working on this a couple years ago, we started building our first kind of simulation environment, and we built an operating room-based scenario, or just an operating room theater as kind of our piece. And then we started poking around for an actual clinical example to give us context to prototype around. And we asked around the community, and in 1 week, four different groups told us, build fire, the fire in the operating room. And it was Stanford, Intermountain Health, AORN, and NYCHH, which is New York City Health and Hospitals, mm-hmm. just because it's an important thing to train on. It's a skill that most hospitals try to run people through drills on every year, and it's a very time and resource consuming thing to do in physical simulation that is probably actually just flat out better served done in VR than it is in physical simulation. And so that's why we selected it. In the grand scheme of things, it's relatively simple compared mm-hmm. to some of the other things we're going to be taking on. So that's why we selected it as our first course topic, and just kept building it out from there, and it turned into our first product.
And how receptive are the surgeons to using the VR to train on this type of procedure?
So it's interesting. You've got several different user groups within this, and it's actually not necessarily intended for the surgeon. So the main target audience for this is either what we call is the role of the scrub nurse or the circulating nurse, and the scrub tech. So you kind of have five primary roles within an operating room: a surgeon, anesthesia, scrub nurse, circulating nurse, and surgical tech. And this particular piece is really designed from the perspective of the nursing staff, and which is a really big deal because, you know, they have a lot of responsibility in managing the fire and actually putting it out. So they have been very receptive to it. We're finding that they really like it as a form of training. And some of our earlier customer rollouts, I mean, you know, we're getting data back that, you know, 80 to 90% of people would prefer this to any other type of training they could do around this situation. So they like it. They find it really refreshing. It's a better place for them to be able to practice these skills. And it's, you know, it's just a good use of technology around this.
Just out of curiosity, how long do they have to put the fire out before it does serious damage to the patient?
So they've got about a minute. So the way it works is the fire will go off, and we actually put a timer in front of them. And most people are so focused on fire, they never see the timer, which is really interesting. But the fire progresses, and the more it progresses, the more severe the burn itself becomes. And so if they were able to get it out within, you know, a few seconds, which they should be able to do if they're properly set up and prepared, the burn's really no worse than a sunburn. But if, you know, they let it go and 15, 20 seconds elapses because they just either don't know what to do or they weren't set up to deal with it, the burn gets really severe. And they can actually see the severity of that once everything's, all the draping's removed from the patient, mm-hmm. which really visually reinforces, yeah, this could really get out of control very quickly. The case that we kind of modeled our sim scenario off of was a real case where the woman who had the fire happened actually ended up with second and third degree burns over, I believe 17, 20% of her body, and ended up passing 2 years later from the severity of the burns.
Wow.
So it's really kind of trying to replicate that. You know, you got to be prepared and understanding what to do and be able to act quickly, or something, you know, truly bad can happen in this, and kind of really trying to reinforce that within the training.
Really interesting. So tell me a little bit about the evolution of virtual reality for this purpose. Are we at a point where it can do everything you want it to do, or is there still room for a lot of growth?
Consumer commercial grade headsets have been out 3 years now, right? And I think the headsets we have now, the generation that we have, like with the Vive Pro, is at a resolution and quality perspective that's perfectly acceptable. You know, so we're finding that people, when they get into the headset, usually the first thing they say is, holy cow, I can't believe it looks this good. I never thought it would look this good.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that that because of that, within about 20 seconds of being in our experience, people completely let themselves go to the experience and 100% believe they're in a real operating room. Like they've completely suspended disbelief and they give themselves to the experience. And that's when the learning itself happens, right? So from that perspective, I think the ultimate core of the technology exists in the market today. Now, the trick is, I think there's some things on the peripheral that really need to happen for us to get like mainstream, like really, you know, mainstream adoption of this,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, having a tethered headset to a computer while it works is a bit of a deployment barrier. It'll be a lot easier when we can get an untethered experience that doesn't have to connect to a computer. So if we look at like the new headsets coming out by Oculus, you know, if we can replicate the quality of experience you get off of a Vive Pro mm-hmm. into, you know, a completely untethered headset, that's going to go a long ways. I think that's your tipping point of, you know, kind of for mass adoption in this. And it looks like those headsets are probably coming out this year. We'll just have to see how well they really work in this situation. You know, hand tracking, the controllers in general tend to be a little bit of an inhibitor for mm-hmm. for folks. We've worked a lot to really try to make those go away. But, you know, having a more natural set of hand movements would really, I think, is your next step of kind of taking a technical barrier away from the experience. So, you know, that's something we're definitely looking at and trying to work on. And then, the area we've been particularly focused on is natural language processing. So using voice as a control mechanism in it so that you don't have to use a controller to pick from a menu. Rather, you can just have a conversational command structure, you know, in the application. And at least for healthcare, it's a very team-oriented environment. You know, it's very rare that you're just a person doing something, right? Especially mm-hmm. in these kind of patient safety crisis type situations. So we actually see using voice as being a really big step forward in this. So again, that's kind of we're gonna have to see, you know, like if you're using a Vive Pro with a full computer, processing power is not a problem at all to make that work. It'll be interesting to see if you move into an all-in-one headset that's not tethered. Will we still have enough processing power to make all that work correctly?
Can you give me an example of how the voiceover would work?
Yeah, so like we're working on a piece right now where you're commanding, you're in a team-based environment, you're a team lead, and as part of that, you're monitoring the situation, monitoring the patient, understanding what's going on, and then giving the team instructions on what to do. And so, you know, if you don't use voice processing, then you're having to use a menu system to be able to give that direction. So you may be monitoring the situation and then you'd have to say, okay, fine. I want them to, you know, give oxygen to the patient and start chest compressions. So it would be click, click, right? Which is why you naturally went through a thought process of processing the information, the decision making. You have to now break that to go to a menu system to mm-hmm. give the instruction, which isn't the natural flow of things. But with language processing, you can very easily just say, like you normally would say, you know, bag them and give them oxygen. I want you to now start chest compressions. And you can give those instructions to your virtual team, and the mm-hmm. virtual team can start that. And it's much, much more aligned to the natural communication flow.
Sure.
That would happen in that healthcare setting, right? And, you know, it's not always the case that you're going to need language processing, you know, so like I know, you know, there's some interesting stuff being done, you know, around like industrial equipment training, you know, you don't need voice processing necessarily to simulate running a crane, right?
Sure.
Because it's more about the controllers. It's just in healthcare with a team-oriented, you know, training environment, bringing voice in, I think, is probably more important than bringing hand controls in a lot of the scenarios we're seeing.
And is there, are you thinking about getting into AR at all with this?
AR is a really important technology, and I think what's going to happen is the use case is going to dictate the technology that's going to be used, mm-hmm. right? So in some of the scenarios we're working on, AR is not an appropriate technology. And so we've been really keen on trying to develop a roadmap that VR is the appropriate technology set to be able to execute the training correctly. And there's an entirely different path where AR would be that. So I don't know that it's really giving in as much as it is using the right tool for the job.
I see. And for my listeners, can you take me through just a little bit about what you were doing at Optera with first responders and VR training? Because part of our focus is obviously on environmental health and safety here. So I feel like there's a lot of applications for keeping workers safe with a VR training, and I just wanted to know a little bit more about that.
On the safety front, the piece that we've really been working on is we were awarded a grant by NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, mm-hmm. to do a VR piece around a heart attack in a home and the public safety worker response to that incident. And so it was a pretty substantial award. It was about $600,000, and it's really focused on a situation where, you know, you come into a house, somebody has had a heart attack or is in a cardiac arrest, and how do you build an environment where, like, an EMT or a police officer can come in and train and simulate the response set that's needed in that situation. And it goes from the hospital and also the transport to the ambulance and the ambulance transport to the ED or the emergency room. And so in that situation, it's really about building those skills around that specific group within public safety. And that could be that maybe the first person to respond and get there ends up being a police officer. And what they'll be able to do and be expected to do is different than if an EMT or a paramedic responds and how they'll be able to deal with the situation. So in this, we're, one, building the entire environment, and we're building the environment where basically you walk into the living room of a house, there's a gentleman on the floor in cardiac arrest, and there's a lot of other elements that are going on where, you know, the wife may be, there's in the room and she's in hysterics, which adds a stressor to the environment. Maybe, you know, it was an elderly couple and they had the TV incredibly loud, which adds an additional stressor to it. We can control the lighting conditions and maybe the sun is blaring through the window, kind of half blinding you.
Sure.
While you're in the process of doing chest compressions, right? So it adds a level of situational complexity, mm-hmm. Beyond just the skill set that needs to be involved in that.
But that could translate to the workplace too, right? If a coworker mm-hmm. goes into cardiac arrest rather than in the home.
Yeah. And that's why VR is kind of more interesting than AR in these scenarios. In the AR, you're projecting a scenario over the real world, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in VR, we're taking over the whole world, right, and showing you our representation of it. So in training for something like this, you know, we can just put you in a conference room, you put the AR goggles or VR goggles on, and now you're transported into a mid-century modern house with an 86-year-old gentleman in cardiac arrest. And then, you know, you do that scenario, and then we hit next. And now you're, you know, responding to, you know, a similar scenario in a shopping mall, right? And we can change the situation really easily. Whereas in AR, since you can still see the same, the real world, mm-hmm. we can't change and manipulate what is there from the real world, right? And that's why we like VR for a lot of these training scenarios. You know, and AR definitely has its place, but for certain things.
Sure.
But for these type of training scenarios, VR just seems to be, it gives you more ability to have a higher degree of situational change, which is really important to the training, right?
Okay.
Yes.
So if you were to look into your VR crystal ball, where do you see this heading, and what would be the potential applications in the future for using VR for training and basically safety purposes?
Yeah, so for us, you know, we really are looking at, we're focused initially from a healthcare perspective on high risk, low frequency events, and ones that have an element of safety concern around the actual training itself. So like fire in the OR is a really great example. You know, this does not happen a lot, but it's a skill you need to know, because if you don't know it and it does happen, you're going to be caught flat-footed and maybe the consequences to that are very bad, right? It's something that's challenging to do in real life because, you know, you're creating these situations where we're trying to do in a mock situation. And state-of-the-art is two things. One is you use a fog machine to replicate smoke, and we try to then put out fog machine smoke, which isn't really necessarily all that compelling from a training perspective, right? And then the opposite extreme is there's some companies that actually come out and they'll create real fires, and you really put a fire out, right?
Which is dangerous to the workers, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so it may have a high degree of realism, but it's one, it's not very scalable, right? Because you're creating real fires. And the second is, yeah, it has an element of danger to everybody involved, right? Whereas here we can make things, you know, that we can very much simulate it to the point that I would say probably 7 to 8 out of 10 people who are who do our VR experience when the fire actually erupts on the patient take physical steps away from it, right? So they're really feeling the fact that there's a fire there, and it scares them, and they sure. physically respond away from it, right? So it really becomes a good thing. So those situations where we can really focus on that combination of things seems to work really, really well. And also scalability, because what we're finding is, so you're like on fire, you can absolutely replicate this within a physical sim center, right? But it takes an hour to set up for one. It requires you to have 4 or 5 people in the scenario and then a debrief time, right? And we can do it in software at probably 30 to 40% of the cost of trying to do it in a physical way with more realism and a higher degree of retention of the knowledge, right? So it's kind of the best of all worlds there. And that's really what we're focused on.
Cool. And I guess I should just ask, has any person who's used the training software actually had to replicate that training in the real world yet?
We haven't heard that come through yet. We did have one report, like when we were in the design phase, we were working with a clinician who, it was really interesting. What he said is, you know, he was walking into a situation in relief of somebody else who just had to leave, you know, because of timing situations, and came in and all of a sudden was looking at the situation and he goes, oh, whoa, this is really bad, right? And what he said is that it, you know, just the fact that he was kind of working through the project with us gave him a heightened sense of situational awareness, which allowed him to stop a potentially dangerous situation from occurring. And while we're really trying to replicate the situation of, like, how do you put the fire out, you know, we're also very, very concerned and really trying to teach people what are the conditions that actually exist that cause the fire, so that if they notice that condition of three elements is starting to exist, that they can intervene and stop it before it happens so that you never have the problem. Like, we never want anybody to actually have to put a fire out. We want people to recognize a situation that may be potentially dangerous and stop that situation so the fire never occurs in the first place.
Great. I'd like to thank Cole Sandow for joining me today, and thank you for listening to this edition of the Sphera Now podcast. You can listen to other Sphera Now episodes at sphera.com/podcast or download them on Google Play, iTunes, or Stitcher. Thank you so much for listening.
This concludes this episode of Sphera Now. For more content on topics such as these, we encourage you to visit sphera.com, sphera.com. While there, feel free to click contact and submit feedback on this podcast or suggest topics you'd like to see us cover. Thank you and have a great rest of your day.